out there, oh, a peace is calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world anew.
Welcome to Muffin Talk.
Welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program that is brought to you by Titi Paunamo, Study and Joy. Once a week, I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, the Catholic Church, or interfaith work. My name is Beate Mattis, and I'm happy to welcome today Farida Master.
Thank you.
A former editor of several publications, Farida Master, who has been a part of the media in New Zealand and overseas for more than three decades, has authored two biographies and is on the board of the Zoroastrian Community Trust of New Zealand. She's currently researching her Zoroastrian roots and is talking to us today from Victoria Island in Canada, where she's taking a short sabbatical before she heads back to a world of headlines and deadlines in New Zealand. Farida, your religion is sometimes called Zoroastrianism or Zarathustrianism or Mazdaizna. Can you please tell us more about the origins of this religion?
Firstly, thank you for having me here, and thank you for all your hard work and the good work that you're doing. The word Zoroastrianism it comes from the Greek word Zoroastra, that is the founder of our religion, and also known as Zarathustra, that is our prophet was also known as Zarathustra. But what is very interesting is that the Mazdaizna religion, comes from the word followers of Ahura Mazda. That is, Ahura is the Lord of light and wisdom. Mm-hmm. So the God of light and wisdom, that is the creator. And that's why the Mazdaizna or the Mazdaiznis, that is followers of Ahura Mazda. So it's very interesting. In fact, I just asked the same question to a scholar a few days ago that, you know, we've been known as Mazdaiznas, and then how we known as Zoroastrians. And he told me that centuries later, when the Zoroastrians were being persecuted by the Arabs in Iran, so that's the time we were known as followers of Zarathustra. So like those Zoroastrians. So that's how it came about. For the purest, it would be like we are Mazdaiznas, followers of Zarathustra.
And you call him a prophet, Sarah?
Prophet, yes.
Okay.
The prophet, the sage, the reformer, the priest, yes.
And when you talked about the prophet, and so how do you become a Zoroastrian? Do you have to believe in the prophet, or is something with birth, or how do you become a Zoroastrian?
Yes, you have to be born a Zoroastrian. You have to be born a Zoroastrian. There's a bit of controversy surrounding that, through the years now. But basically, you got because of conversion, you know, not being allowed, and there's a lot of history behind that. There are the Orthodox and the Unorthodox or the Progressive, and it is believed that you have to be born a Zoroastrian to be a one.
So you can't convert?
No, and that's the reason why for hundreds of years people have been talking about the community of Zoroastrians dying as a race. According to tradition, if the woman marries outside the community, not to a non-Zoroastrian, then she is not allowed to continue practicing the religion. But of course, this has been, people have gone to court and, you know, things like that over the years, and things are changing. There is a lot of debate because it's such an ancient religion, and it is believed that it was one of the most progressive religions. Centuries ago, there were even women priests, what we hear about. But over the years, it's been an oral tradition like every old ancient religion. And it's how you interpret it and, you know, different dogmas that come through the years through priests and scholars and, you know, so that's been a bit of a divide. But yes, that's how things are changing now.
So if you're born in New Zealand by Zoroastrian yes. parents, what country do you go to have the biggest choice of partners?
That's a good question.
Where are the most Zoroastrians? Where can you find them?
So most Zoroastrians are in India, in the UK, in the US, and in Canada. These are the places that most, but interestingly, there's also the Zoroastrian Youth Congress. And of course, people would hate me for saying that that's where you meet your partners as well. But I'm not officially allowed to say that. But yes, there are lots of congresses that happen. It's quite an active and progressive and dynamic community. And so, like, for instance, my daughter met her partner at the Zoroastrian Youth Congress that happened in New Zealand in 2015. She wasn't looking for one. And there was a newspaper article which she was absolutely mad about in the Herald when they wrote about it, you know, that the Congress is happening, and she happened to be in the marketing department, and they asked her, so if you meet somebody, you know, at the Congress, would you marry him? And she was like, I'm not looking for someone like that, but it did happen eventually. So, yeah, but...
What region was Zarathustra from originally? What is the main region?
So they say that Zarathustra, I mean, no one can exactly pinpoint, because as Mary Boyce, one of the more scholars on Zoroastrianism, said, that it is the most ancient revealed religion in the world, and it has directly or indirectly influence mankind more than any other faith. So it's so old and so ancient. So the exact place or the time is a bit of a blur, but from what I read and what scholars have said is that it was essentially rooted in Central Asia, and then it spread across the southern plateau of Iran and western Iran. What it was in Iran in those days is just Persia. So it was a religion that was practiced in the Achaemenid and the Sasanian and the Parthian empires. And at one point of time, it was the biggest, most following of the religion in the Persian Empire across 30 nations is what I've read.
Persian Empire was huge at that time.
It was huge at that time,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where it was rooted.
Yeah. So it's also been said that some people say that it's the first monotheistic religion. So the first religion that has only one God. And that's something that is very typical, like for the Abrahamic traditions, but for other traditions too. But that's quite amazing, the first monotheistic religion.
Indeed,
what
yes.
You say that they were very progressive.
Yes, that's right. So the story goes that Zarathustra, who was a very young, learned, progressive, sage reformer, was seeking answers, and he was meditating, and he was asking why there's so much evil in this world. How can we fight evil? You know, what can we do for humanity to lead good lives? And they say that at the age of 30, he had a vision, he had enlightenment, and there was this golden light of Vahumanu that spoke to him. And that was the voice of Aura Master, the voice of God. And that in those days where there was paganism and, you know, lots of gods and oppressive class structures, debauchery, blood sacrifice and things like that, the message he got was that there is only one God, the Creator. And he is the one who has created the spiritual and the material world. And he is Ahura Mazda, the Lord of Wisdom, which actually from an ancient point of view and makes it so relevant in the modern times, because we're talking about wisdom. Yeah. You know, that's the basic. That's something we all want. Don't know how much I have, but yes, that's something we are always pursuing or hankering after.
I think also most religions would say that there is always somebody or a divine being that knows a lot more than we do. So we never reach it.
That's right.
Yes. So sometimes also the Zoroastrianism is said to be a dualistic faith in which balances between extremes like light and darkness, etc. In which way does this affect the practice of the religion?
So I think the darkness and light could also be metaphors for wisdom and ignorance. And so according to Zoroastrianism, each one of us should contribute to the cosmic battle against evil. So there are two forces, you know, the Spenta Mainyu, that is the good light, the truth. Mm-hmm. And there is Angra Mainyu, that is the evil forces. And that's what our lives are all about, because constantly in our day-to-day lives, we have both the forces, and it's up to us to make the choice. Mm-hmm. Also, the best thing about this doctrine of Zoroastrianism is about having free will. So you have the free will to make a choice. And once you make a choice, you are responsible for it. And once, you know, you have to then, it's like as you sow, as you reap, you know.
Yeah.
So you are the creator of your own destiny. And so that, of course, carries on to the day of judgment and, you know, all the things about having to pay a price for what the choices you have made.
So when you have to make that decision and that decision-making process, are you then withdrawing and praying, or are you relying on having the right inspiration immediately? How do you go about
it? I think it's a combination of everything. So day-to-day lives, you're constantly asking yourself, am I doing the right thing? Is this the righteous path? Because that's what Zarathustra talks about, mm-hmm. following the righteous path. So all of us have a conscience, you know. So it's about the moral compass that we have. And it's so easy to go astray, you know, just a little bit here and just a little bit there. But if you're walking the righteous path, then yes, you know for yourself deep inside which is the right decision you're making and which is the wrong one. And sometimes when you're confused, you pray yes for the right answers.
When we're talking about the right and the wrong and the good and the evil, and I understand that the symbol for the Zoroastrians is the Faravaha, and it looks like to me like a person standing on wings. And it's also on the symbol of the egg of the Religious Diversity Center on the logo. Can you explain what it is about? Is it a man standing on wings, or what is it?
So there are various interpretations, but I just wanted to also add that apart from the Faroar, is also we believe in fire, because it's like fire is light, it's enlightenment, it's wisdom. Getting rid of evil thoughts, you know, all kinds of things. But yes, the Faroa definitely is also an ancient symbol. So there are many interpretations to it. One is that This is man's soul connected to divinity. And it's the whole circle of life. The wings have three layers, and it's constantly reminding you of good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. And if you have good thoughts, then it follows the good words, and the good deeds follow. So that is the basic, very basic tenet of the religion. You ask any little Zoroastrian child, what is your religion about? And this is what it is: good thoughts, good words, and good deeds. It's as simple as that. And then there are those two little prongs, which is one stands for good and one stands for evil. And so, you know, turn away from evil, you know, constantly aspire to do good in your life. And yes, there's a little circle that's the eternal life, eternity. It symbolizes eternity. So it's the day of judgment, and everything depends on your deeds at the end of the day. Yeah.
Is this a very ancient symbol? Because I've seen some old carvings in, I think, in the Middle East, and there was something that looked like it, but I'm not sure if it was this, but I'm just wondering, is it a very ancient symbol?
Very, very ancient, yes. I mean, some people have also said that it has relevance to Egypt. So, you know, it's like almost Egyptian. It has gone back to several civilizations. So, yeah, it is indeed very, very ancient, yes. Mm. And it has, I think, evolved over the years.
Oh, definitely.
Yes.
And so we talked a little bit about the connection between Zoroastrianism and other world religions, who all originate in the same area of the Middle East.
Yes.
You know some more about it?
So yes, definitely. That's what all the scholars say, that most of the Zoroastrianism has influenced their Abrahamic religions, Judaism and even Islam. I think it all talks about divinity and the victory of good over evil. It talks about the resurrection, you know. Mm. It talks about heaven and hell. Mm. So over the years, because it was such an ancient religion, and I'm sure parts of it also existed before that when there were other religions, it has definitely... That's what the scholars say, that influence every other religion, Western religion, as well as the Eastern religions. So, yes.
And is it true that the priests are called the Magi?
Initially, yes. In Zoroastrianism earlier, they were called the Magi. The Magi were extremely intelligent, influential men. In those days, who helped the kings to make their decisions, because they were mathematicians, they knew astronomy, astrology, and medicine. I'm even told that they sat in the courts, to help to make the king to make judgments. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of influence on the decisions and how the kingdoms were run. Over the years, I think even after Zarathustra passed over, it was the Magi's who eventually wrote down, things about the religion. And so they did have a lot of influence on how the religion has been shaped.
Yes. You just said wrote down. So you do have books that describe
something? Many centuries later. Yes, yeah. Many centuries later, there have conversations with God. That is Zarathustra's conversation with Aura Master, which is in the Gathas. So yes, it has been written down. The word has it that a lot of it was destroyed when Alexander the Great, conquered Persia. But then again, there are those who say that no, it wasn't. So
maybe it was rewritten afterwards.
That's the common belief. Yes. Sorry?
Maybe it was rewritten afterwards, because if there are people yes. who have read it many times or who have been passing on the traditions, they That's might have right. written it down again, or maybe they found yes. some parts. So
yes,
yeah.
that's so what's easy. Happened. Yes, and then even after some part of the Zoroastrians fled to India, were known as Parsis then. I believe that even they wrote to the priest in Iran who were there and said, could you tell us more about the traditions? Because those who moved to India also tried to assimilate to the Indian way of living, to the Hindu way of living. So they often wrote, and there are written proofs of they've written about how the religion evolved and what's happened. Yeah.
And you just mentioned Parsi. Is that a name for the Zoroastrians? Parsi?
Yes, in India. Yes.
And
yes.
So they are Parsi. And what are the other group? There are two groups, isn't it?
So the Iranians and the Parsi. So they're called the Persians. The Iranians are the Persians. And the Parsis went to India. So the Parsis moved to India around the 8th to 10th century, and they went to the coast of Gujarat and asked the king. The story goes that they asked, can we take refuge in India, as they sailed by boat. There's some others that went to Central Europe and different parts of the world, but some went to India and asked the king, local king, that, would you give us refuge? And the story goes again that the king said, no, we do not want anyone here, and because we don't want anyone to convert to other religions, and it's like the Hindu kingdom. And so it is said that the head priest asked for milk and asked for a spoonful of sugar. And then he mixed the sugar and the milk and said, this is how we will assimilate with the local people and the culture and the traditions. And we will not convert anybody into our religion. And so a lot of people strongly believe that it is because of the promise we gave the Hindu king that we do not allow anyone to convert into the religion. And so we've kept our promise for hundreds of years.
Oh, wonderful.
So that's the story that goes. Of course, like I said, I'm a layperson.
but it's a wonderful story about the milk and the sugar. I won't forget
that's
the story.
Right. That's
and, last, we have one more minute about truth. I think that would be an interview by itself. But if you, for the Zoroastrians, the term truth is to describe the relationship of all things in perfect harmony. Is that correct? Did I understand this?
Absolutely correct. Yes, that's on the dot. Yes, and that's what, living in harmony with all the creations of nature, harmony with yourself and harmony with people around you. And that truth also involves social justice. So if you see something is going wrong, you've got to stand up and, assert yourself, or if you can't, work in any other way to make sure that what is happening is right. So path of righteousness, the path of Asha, that's another basic tenet of the religion. So day-to-day life, be true to yourself. Every moment, be true to yourself and be true to others.
And that also relates to the good deeds that we talked about at the beginning.
Absolutely. It all ties in very well. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Farida, for this interview.
And thank you
for explaining us a little bit more about the Zoroastrians, because we don't hear so much about them anymore. And as I understand, many, many hundreds of years ago. They were very powerful. That's right. But with good deeds, you're always powerful. Doesn't matter how many people. One person can make a difference.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You've done a great job with your questions, I must say that. I hope I could answer at least some of them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Please note that Titipo Namu Study and Joy is offering some new programs in November and December. On the 4th and the 25th of November, Leticia Pudumpadat is going to introduce us into Ignatian Imaginative Contemplation. If you would like to know more about it and or maybe you just refresh your knowledge about this special kind of meaningful prayer, please register with us and join us via Zoom. Both sessions are going to be held from 2 to 3:30 p.m. For more information about this and other programs, please check out our website at www.studyjoy.nz or send us an email at info@studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha, keep safe, and many blessings.
Out there, old pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet for the world a new day dawning and shining. Shine.